Granville T. Candyman was this.
Oh my God. Hello, welcome to Guides the Unknown. I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
And this week we are talking about the Candyman franchise from soup to nuts.
Yeah.
The movies, the book or short story.
Yes.
Whatever it is, William covered that part, obviously. We've got it all.
Yeah, we've got everything. Can you believe it? Mm-hmm. Everything, including the short story and movies, which that's really all there is.
Right.
I tried to see if he appeared anywhere else. He's not in, you know, he's not a killer in Dead by Daylight, the video game.
Yeah.
Really, they made a toy of him, and that's about it. That's all, you know, there's no comic books or anything.
Is it like a Pee-wee toy where it's like soft with a hard head and you can pull it?
it'll say, that sounds like, horrible.
Be my victim. Yeah, be my victim.
No, it's one of those, I think it's the McFarlane toys series.
Oh, that makes sense.
Like movie maniacs.
Yeah.
So, but that's it. You would think this character is so well-known, at least.
Mm-hmm. Infamous
and iconic. The Candyman certainly is iconic. I don't think that he's ever really risen to the level of the Friday the 13th franchise, Jason, you know, or Michael Myers or anything like that. But he's a known character. I just assumed he would have appeared somewhere else. But no, it's the original Clive Barker short story, the original trilogy of movies, and the brand new reboot from this year. And that's it. That's the Candyman story.
Cool.
It's
worth mentioning that we talk about the reboot on our Patreon. So if you're interested in hearing us have a long conversation about the 2021 Candyman, go to patreon.com/gttupod and become a donor.
Yeah, exactly. So that's there literally right this second. You could pause this episode and go listen to it if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. We will not be talking about the 2021 movie in this episode.
No.
Maybe we'll reference it or something like that. But we're going to keep it spoiler-free for that movie, to be sure.
Yep.
But we're going to spoil every previous Candyman thing. The original short story and the original trilogy.
We're going to crack the candy shell of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Let it all pour out.
Starting with where it all began.
That's right.
So Candyman started as a short story by Clive Barker.
I did the same thing as you.
What?
I thought you were covering the third movie, no?
This is the short story, not the movie.
But why does it say 1992 movie?
I told you that I was going to take notes on some of them.
Oh, thank God. Okay. Okay.
Terrifying. Terrifying.
I thought that we accidentally covered the same thing.
No. I did take some notes, but then...
That's right. Okay.
Yeah, it was right there. Woo! Yeah, okay. I rewatched Candyman for this episode. That's right. I was going to try to watch all of them, but I ended up not being able to. So I accidentally just watched the first one.
All right, we're good.
Although I will give you space.
No, it's fine.
I'll give you plenty of room. Don't worry. But no, so the original short story is written by Clive Barker, who also wrote created the Hellraiser franchise and many other things. But so Clive Barker had all of these short stories that he wrote, and he released them as the Books of Blood, they were called. So there were multiple volumes. The story that contains Candyman came in volume 5 of the Books of Blood, somewhere around 1985. I didn't get a great published date, but all of the Books of Blood seem to have come out around 84, 85. And the title of the original short story is The Forbidden. The Forbidden. And the Candyman in that story is very different from the Candyman of the movies. It's plain to see. I think obviously most people are aware of the like Tony Todd deep voiced, you know, Chicago set Candyman. But this is, you know, Clive Barker is a British author. This story takes place in London.
He's a bit more of a candy man.
He's a candy man.
Right?
He's quite delicious. yeah. So it takes place in London, and it certainly is about, like, you know, the Candyman movies are all about, you know, racism and you know, the original story is a little bit more about class.
Okay.
Class struggle. So our protagonist is named Helen Buchanan. Slightly different name from the movies. And she is doing a research all about graffiti.
Okay.
And at that point, she goes to a place that is heavily graffitied, incredibly run-down building, and is just walking around trying to take photographs of like all the artwork that's on the walls. And it's graffiti, 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 graffiti. And then she discovers a room that has a face painted around the door frame that's meant to look like a person with their head thrown back and their mouth wide open, and the door is in the person's mouth.
Cool.
And from a certain place where she's standing, she sees that it's not just supposed to be that the door that you walk through, if you enter the door, you're entering this, you know, person's mouth. It's almost meant to be as if the entire hallway from the door is now maybe his throat.
Oh.
So there's even like a light fixture that she refers to as maybe supposed to be
the uvula.
The uvula. And so I don't know. It was just interesting. It turns the entire building into sort of Candyman's, like you're being devoured if you go into this building.
That's neat.
And where the Candyman legend stuff starts to come in, because Candyman, the movies, I always think about as being about urban legends, and mm-hmm. it's very similar to Bloody Mary,
yeah,
with the repeat Candyman's name into a mirror and he'll appear. That stuff starts to come in just by Helen walking around and talking to people
mm-hmm.
who talk about like, yeah, didn't you know a guy was killed? Yeah, some guy got killed. It starts to then become about her suddenly pivoting away from being interested in the graffiti at all and just talking more and more to these people about their experiences and people who maybe died. So at one point, she's speaking to somebody who's talking about the guy that died and starts to talk about the man who did it. She goes, he had a hook, like Jack the Ripper. And then the next page, Helen is now talking to her boyfriend or husband, Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, yeah, the man apparently had a hook instead of a hand.
Okay.
But I noticed that's not what the person she was talking to said.
Uh-huh.
She was speaking to Anne-Marie, who is a character from the movie. So Anne-Marie goes, yeah, a man was murdered and the guy who did it had a hook.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He had a hook. And then the way that Helen reports it to Trevor is the guy had a hook for a hand.
So it's just a game of telephone.
Already. And I went back to double check to make sure that I didn't just gloss over it. But no, rather than the book or the short story telling you right off the bat, we're going to deal with urban legends, you almost just have to catch that it's happening.
Right.
That like, no, Helen's already changed the story a little bit.
Right.
Off of one telling, which is pretty interesting. And then as she keeps going back and back to the building, she starts seeing phrases, the same phrase everywhere, sweets to the sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the movies, I'm aware of this appearing places, but in the book, because it's a short story, they take the time to sort of like think about them and ruminate them on them. So sweets to the sweet, the words were so benign. Why did she seem to sense menace in them? Was it in their excess, perhaps? In the sheer overabundance of sugar upon sugar? Honey upon honey? And it all just starts to become about like trying to analyze language and storytelling.
Uh-huh.
She eventually starts talking to a very pretentious man at dinner who is like, you don't believe any of these stories, do you? What about the lovers and the escaped lunatic? Have you heard that one? These stories are very common. So urban legends just start to become...
Yeah.
A part of it. Eventually, honestly, I certainly enjoyed the story. But it's so much is about Helen just bit by bit
mm-hmm.
going down this sort of rabbit hole to where she's getting increasingly interested in the Candyman. So like she goes back to the building at one point and sees that the door with the Candyman face is boarded up.
Yeah.
Oh, somebody sealed it up. I can't get in there anymore. She'll later go back and it's wide open again.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts to be unclear if she's experiencing supernatural things and doesn't realize they're supernatural.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. It's sort of hard to tell the order of events here and what's real and what's not. There is so Anne-Marie, the person that she spoke to who was talking about people being murdered, has a baby named Carrie. And a big part of Helen talking to this pretentious guy is all about him saying, no, these things are definitely not real. Tell you what, if you can prove to me that somebody actually died at this place, it's called Butts Court.
Really?
It really
B-U-T-T-S?
Is. B-U-T-T-S.
Okay.
Like, yeah, Butts Court.
It's a different place over there.
He's like, if you can prove that there was a murder at Butts Court, I will take you out to dinner at the fanciest of restaurants.
Mm.
So when Anne-Marie's...
She's probably like, I don't want to spend any more time with this guy.
She doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. She
Give me a that, gift certificate.
She makes that perfectly clear.
He's using... what the hell's that guy's name from Seinfeld? Who wants soup?
Oh my God, Banya.
Banya.
Kenny Banya.
Yeah, he's going by Banya rules.
He's going by Banya
rules. A friendship.
So when Anne-Marie's daughter turns up murdered, and, you know, obviously Helen is like trying to figure out what's going on, and she's realizing like, oh, maybe there are legends, maybe there is a killer here. The guy goes like, well, you've proved it. I'll take you out to a fancy restaurant. Okay. So it's all this like sort of like calloused nature of things. And I don't know. There's a lot in this book also about how murder brings attention.
Uh-huh.
Because all of a sudden, like with the baby being killed, when Helen shows up back at the building, she can't stay away. When she shows up back at the buildings, now these rundown buildings have tons of people there.
Yeah.
That are just like standing around, looking around at things. It's almost like it becomes a tourist trap or something like that, just because something horrible happened.
Mm-hmm.
So she shows up for the funeral, and she sees that even Anne-Marie maybe looks like she's in shock, but she looks like she's not really mourning.
Uh-huh.
She's like, maybe she's sort of enjoying that this is kind of about her too. Like it does get.
Can't say I don't relate.
I know. It sort of gets into that like sociopathic idea of like a funeral.
Right.
Is attention for the still living.
So much of it.
I know. And so.
I want to be clear. I don't really relate. I'd just like to be clear. We brushed by that. Like everybody knows what we're talking about.
Kristen is a revolting creature. We all know that. Just to be clear. Yeah, we really shouldn't gloss over it. Everybody knows that Kristen's a psychopath, right? Have we ever said that on the show?
Yeah, I lack empathy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Attention is power.
Yeah.
Yeah. She wields emotions like a cudgel.
Like weapons. Like a cudgel.
So here we start to get into the true Candyman stuff. Most of the story is about Helen's investigation.
Uh-huh.
Very late in the story does Candyman actually appear. So here's the moment where it happens. Helen's in the room again with the Candyman face. She's just able to get in now.
Yeah.
She bent down to look more closely and found a handful of sweets,
ooh,
chocolates and caramels wrapped in bright paper, and littered among them, neither so attractive nor so sweet, a dozen razor blades. There was blood on several. She stood up again and backed away from the mattress. There's a mattress on the ground. And heard a buzzing sound reach her ears from the next room. She turned and the light in the bedroom diminished as a figure stepped into the gullet between her and the outside world. That means the hallway, because it's Candyman's mouth and throat.
Right.
Silhouetted against the light, she could scarcely see the man in the doorway, but she smelled him. He smelled like cotton candy, and the buzzing was with him or in him.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The whole thing, I love the way that it's written.
I've never
read Clive Barker before.
I haven't either.
But I really liked it. And even him saying the buzzing was with him or in him. It made me think of church. In him.
With him, in him, in the unity of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, they do this whole thing of like all with him glory and in and honor. Him.
Yep.
And that's how Candyman is introduced. The first thing that he says is, I came for you, which is classic Candyman from the movies.
Oh, absolutely.
Everything is about like, I've come for you. I was obliged to come.
Now, I read that Candyman in the book has yellow skin and a funny red beard.
Yeah. So here's what it is. He was bright to the point of gaudiness. This is bizarre. A physical. Uh-huh.
He's a candy.
He's a candy man.
Right.
He's not described. His race is not described. His age is not described. But Tony Todd, I think we like the entire appeal of Tony Todd is like he's attractive. He's got that like smooth voice.
He's got a commanding presence.
He's supposed to be in the Candyman movie. Like a seductive Dracula-esque person.
Yes.
Well, here's the original Candyman. His flesh a waxy yellow.
Okay, so not so seductive.
Already not so hot.
Uh-uh.
His thin lips pale blue. His wild eyes glittering as if their irises were set with rubies. His jacket was a patchwork. His trousers the same. He looked, she thought, almost ridiculous, with his blood-stained motley and a hint of rouge on his jaundiced cheeks.
Ugh. And this guy does not sound like he's for me.
So I wrote down, he's fudging weird looking and he smells like cotton candy.
I do love cotton candy.
Who doesn't?
So he's got me there.
So he murmurs sweets to the sweet and stretches his hooked hand toward her face. She could no longer see light from the outside world or hear the children playing in Butts Court. See, it's true.
No, I believe you.
All the legends are true. So But
say its name
with everything.
Butts.
He does some classic Candyman talking. Butts.
Yeah.
Five butts.
Yep.
Five butts will appear.
That's true.
At a talk. Candyman is he loves a monologue.
Yeah.
So he says, "There will be some blame," he told her. "They will say your doubts shed innocent blood." Although, you know, like, Tony Todd's the one with the nice, deep voice. This Candyman's more like...
I can't imagine this guy has a nice voice.
But I say, what's blood for?
Yeah,
it's not for shedding. And in time, the scrutiny will pass. The police will leave. The cameras will be pointed at some fresh horror. And they will be left alone to tell stories of the Candyman again.
He's here because she doubted that he existed.
Yeah, he doesn't like that at all.
He doesn't like that at all. He thrives on people believing in
him. Yes.
Much like Freddy Krueger.
Yes.
Which I think is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically going to start trying to insist that she believe in him and start to try to convince her that... that if she were to die, she would also be remembered in story.
Okay, yep.
And it starts to work.
Hmm.
So a crazy thing that happens in the story, the killed child, Carrie, Helen saw the funeral go by, the funeral procession go by. The body's not in the casket. The body's in Candyman's room. And she finds it on the mattress.
Ooh.
She later is lured into a bonfire. It's bonfire night.
Yeah.
And she's lured into the bonfire because Candyman's brought the body into the fire. And as she's going in, she's thinking, at one point she starts thinking to herself, she says, "I'd prefer to be forgotten than remembered like that." But then as she's going into the bonfire, she starts thinking, perhaps they would remember her as he said they might. Finding her cracked skull in tomorrow's ashes. Perhaps she might become, in time, a story with which to frighten children. She had lied, saying she preferred death to such questionable fame. She did not. And she sees her husband or boyfriend, Trevor, outside looking for her, because she didn't show up to that dinner that she went with the pretentious man, and he knew what her story was and everything. So she can see through the fire that he's searching around a little bit, and she knows that he's kind of a scumbag too. He's not a faithful partner. And one of the final things in the story at all is she pitied him in his bewilderment and wanted to give him, though he would not have thanked her for it, something to be haunted by. That and a story to tell.
That's awesome. I love that.
I love the way that this is written. That's the way that the story concludes, is with Candyman effectively luring Helen to her death. And the idea that your death becomes something that people essentially rally around and tell stories about and are attracted to. We're all attracted to the mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
And Candyman is full of bees.
Yep.
And sweets to the sweet, which is all about excess.
It's a Shakespeare thing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't think I even knew that.
Yep.
So
I didn't know that until I researched today.
It's interesting, though, because as much as I liked this story, it's so funny to see how it played out in film.
Yeah.
As being like sort of like modified and adapted.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is so interesting, but it's also, I can sense that there's almost like an unfocused quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's... She starts out being about the graffiti.
Right.
And then learning about the legends on the way.
Yeah, they're pretty unrelated.
They're unrelated. And like the Candyman figure is just an oddity. Like, it's almost like in the original story, it's almost the way that like H.P. Lovecraft would create a monster that you're not supposed to be able to understand.
Uh-huh.
Why is Candyman full of bees with waxy lips and he's got a hook?
Yeah.
Like, it's just... It's so many things.
And it's like a Mad Libs of a scary guy.
Yes, 100%. So it's almost like more puzzling than anything, which I certainly enjoy.
Sure.
But if you're trying to make a movie out of that, you certainly start to look for like, well, what are the usable things that I can build a theme for or establish a character? What can I build a character around?
Yeah.
And so it was not shocking to understand how the movie Candyman turned out from this story. But I did love reading this story.
It sounds really good.
But yeah, that's where he started, as really an an inscrutable, impossible to wrap your mind around figure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay, so next we talk about the movie that sprang from that story, Candyman, which came out in 1992. So they have a lot of things in common. The main character's name is Helen. She's doing research, but in the movie, it's a little bit more tied into scary stuff because she's researching urban legends. And she comes across the story of the Candyman and the way that you call him to you and how he's supposed to kill people. So was that not included in there? I can't remember now.
No. So that's interesting, too. There is nothing about mirrors in here, nor is there anything about saying his name five times.
Yeah.
Nope.
Okay, so she hears this urban legend that if you say Candyman five times in a mirror, this scary bad guy with a hook for a hand will come out and kill you. And she finds that kind of fascinating, so she starts researching that, and it brings her to this thing that had been a housing project called Cabrini Green, where a lot of the Candyman killings are said to have happened. And so that leads her to deciding to write her college thesis on the idea that Cabrini Green and the people who lived there used the Candyman legend as a way to kind of deal with the hardships that they faced there. So she's looking into all that stuff. Similarly, she's talking to a professor one night, like kind of, I don't think he's too bad a pretentious dude in the movie, actually.
He's that dude with the long hair. And
oh, that's right.
I think he's pretty annoying.
I didn't rewatch it for this, but we watched this together like not that long ago.
No, I was really being more like, I think a little obsessive compulsive than anything. But she, at one point at the dinner, she goes, he's like, I understand you're doing some interesting research. And she goes, I'm going to bury you.
Yeah.
He gets all aggressive and he goes, oh, pray tell, how are you going to bury me? And she goes, have you ever heard of Candyman? And he goes, why, yes, perhaps you read my paper I wrote on it 10 years ago.
Oh, she must have been like, damn it.
He goes, you don't know the story? And she says, no. And he goes, then how do you plan to bury me?
Okay, like it's
pretty pretentious aggro. You know?
So he is. Okay, so he has the story, and this is the story he tells her. He tells her that the Candyman was this black person way back in the day who painted portraits of wealthy white families. And he ended up falling in love with the daughter, I guess you would say, in a family. And they carried on a love for a little while. Then her dad found out about it, and because he was like a racist evil dude, was not into it. So he and his cronies decided to like torture and kill this guy. And one of the things they did was that they cut off his hand, spread honey all over his arm and other parts of his body, and then let bees swarm him.
It's a lot of things.
It's many different things, not just a hook for a hand,
no,
but bees and honey. It's a lot of things.
I guess the idea, right, like maybe the vision or the central idea of like, oh, I got a good idea for a killer.
Mm-hmm.
He's covered in bees. He's got a hook for a hand.
Right.
And then you have to start to go, well, how?
How did that happen?
Right?
Yeah.
And so then you have to now justify the bees.
Yes.
And you have to justify the hand.
Yeah, totally.
And those are two separate
bees
things.
Bees like honey.
Right. Yeah. And he's, oh, right. And the candy. Yeah.
Right.
Candy. So. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not actually saying I think this is a good idea, but like if bees ate his hand, it would almost be
it'd make more sense.
It would almost be more clean. You know, it's just, there's a lot of things going on.
It would, but since it's such a story in some ways about like race and class and things like that, it kind of makes sense that.
Well, but it became about race. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, the first movie is about race.
But I'm saying the original short story.
Oh,
I want to adapt the Clive Barker story, The Forbidden.
Yeah.
And you go, well, it had elements of class. Let's amplify that and take it further and make it about race. That makes 100% sense.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. And then you start to craft this idea of like, well, shit, the horrific racism could be the origin point of this vengeful killer. And you go, cool. And then you're like, well, but the original guy in the short story had a hook for a hand and had and ate bees.
So how'd he get
so
that?
So it's racism plus bees plus hook hand.
I know. It's a whole
so
lot.
It just becomes by its very nature, it's so much.
Yeah, totally. Just like bees are so much in nature.
So much.
Actually, they're not.
They're not.
I hesitate.
Save the bees.
Save the bees. I signed up to save the bees right here at your house one time.
Oh, is that right?
I was leaving after the show, and somebody from, like, the New Jersey Environmental whatever was like, huh? Like, on the door, and I was like, really? What? Ah. And I signed up. Okay, anyway. So she finds out all that stuff, and that his corpse was burnt, and the ashes were scattered on the land that became the Cabrini Greens housing development. So, in the course of her research, she kind of keeps going with this sort of stuff. Helen is attacked by somebody who calls himself the Candyman, but he's later identified as a local gang member. This is not the real Candyman, no. But, you know, still scary all the same.
He's using the legend for his scary gang persona.
Yes, for his own gain. Real Candyman does not like this. And even though it's not Helen's fault, he appears to Helen saying that she has sullied his reputation by claiming that she was attacked by the Candyman when it wasn't the Candyman, and now he must spill innocent blood to restore that reputation.
I want to read this brief monologue. This is actually how the movie opens, but elements of this monologue appear at this moment in the movie that you're talking about there. And I just want to highlight the one thing I don't like about it.
Okay.
Because I like Candyman.
I like Candyman fine.
I have to say, this watching that I did, I liked it more than I ever have before.
Okay.
But so the movie opens with him saying this monologue from later where Kristen was just talking about. He goes, "They will say I have shed innocent blood. What's blood for if not for shedding? With my hook for a hand, I'll split you from your groin to your gullet. With my hook for a hand."
With my hook for a hand. I kind of like it in a weird way. Like, it's very much a thing that wouldn't really happen in a movie now. Monologuing in that sort of insanely self-aware way.
It's not just that, though. I'm specifically hung up on with my hook for a hand. I know. Why can't it just be with my hook?
Or I'll split you from groin to your gullet.
Sure. What's blood for if not for shedding? I'll split you from your groin to your gullet. Sure. Yeah. But they just wanted to paint. I think honestly, because Candyman.
It's like a folklore like character. Not that he's not, but it's like a Paul Bunyan vibe or something.
Paul Bunyan?
Yeah, like me and my big blue ox, like just saying the things that you're famous
Candyman
for.
Candyman needs a pet. A big bee.
He has bees.
A great big bee that he rides around. Like Ant-Man. You know, Ant-Man can, like, make bugs big?
Yeah.
If anybody out there is listening who has any sway in this arena.
And you can make bugs big. Oh. I mean, if you could get it in the movies.
Yeah, I'm looking for somebody who can make bugs big.
Yeah.
No, but, like, with my hook for a hand, it's because he shows up, like, 45 minutes into the movie.
Right.
They want to give you an idea of what the hell this is. Because Candyman doesn't show up with my hook for a hand.
It's so weird. So he says that he needs to spill innocent blood to restore his rep. Then Helen passes out and wakes up in the apartment of a woman named Anne Marie, who's in the 2021 movie, whose dog is dead and baby is missing. It feels like Candyman basically framed her. And why did he do that if he wants his reputation back?
Or did
he should want to take credit for this?
Or did he control her and make her kill the dog? The dog's head is completely chopped off.
Yes. He seems to be able to do fine all by his damn self and not need to control people.
I am puzzled. Also, we didn't even mention
it. I feel he keeps framing people and I don't understand it.
I don't really understand it. I will say, and it was fleeting, but watching this movie, I was like, oh, I think I get it. And I can already feel that it's already slipped out of my mind. But like, we talked about how messy it is that it's candy and bees and hook and racism.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't even go, oh, plus mirror. Plus chanting.
Yes, yes.
So there are like so many things.
It's a lot. It's a ton. So he also like kind of frames her for the murder of her friend. And then when she's having a psych evaluation because she's been committed, she wants to prove that the Candyman is real. So she says Candyman 5 times and he appears and kills the doctor.
Yeah.
So she escapes. She goes to Candyman's lair in Cabrini Green, and he appears to her after he's completely screwed up her life. All that happened to this woman is that she was attacked by somebody. They said they were the Candyman, so she was like, it was the Candyman. And then this guy has been, like, framing her for murders left and right, killed her friend.
Yeah.
So he says that he will make sure that the baby that he has kidnapped, Anthony, from the apartment that she woke up in, is safe if she will submit to him.
Right.
Which she does by way of him kissing her and pouring bees down her throat, basically. And then he goes further and says that he will actually, not just that, I will release Anthony if you will work with me to terrify everybody in Cabrini Green. So she's like, okay, cool. But then he changes his mind and decides that instead of keeping his promise, he'll really solidify his scary legend by throwing her and Anthony into a big fire they've set.
Right.
Candyman is a jerk.
And I'm not really sure what he's getting at.
Well, like, the whole thing is that this is, like, a gothic romance.
Yeah.
This is toxic. Oh, he keeps making promises, reneging on them,
yes.
Framing her for all manner of things.
So is the idea that she accidentally debunked the Candyman myth by going gang leader? So now he can only haunt her because she's the only one who believes in him. Nobody's going to say Candyman into a mirror five times anymore because they all think, well, it was just some dude.
No.
But so she's the only one who actually believes, so he has to haunt her.
I don't think so.
And
if that's the case, I don't get that.
Well, that's the other thing. So I was watching this movie, and I was thinking a lot about how I've heard, you know, I can't give a name, but I've heard many, like, filmmakers that I respect talk about how they wish movies didn't have to spell out every little thing.
Yeah, a lot of people say that.
Yeah, that they wish that there was still a lot of room for ambiguity. And I think Candyman, the movie, might be so far into ambiguity that I wish that they said a little more concrete.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I wish that he, in his many monologues, I wish at one point he could be like, they will think that you did these murders because of me. Or something like that.
Yeah,
like, he wants to empower himself, but he's making, throughout the movie, he's making Helen Lyle the legend.
Yes.
And by completely. The end, she will be a legend.
Yes, because it ends with Helen saving Anthony from that fire, but she dies. And I didn't even mention Helen has a husband who's like a total Herb. And he.
Prince Herb.
What'd you say?
Prince Herb.
Prince Herb. And he decides that after she has passed, to say Helen's name five times into a mirror, and then she comes a la Candyman.
Right.
So she's like the candy gal now or something. I don't know.
Not a great direction for a sequel, The Candy Gal.
Yeah.
This doesn't sound as good.
It's not as good.
No.
Now, a few things about this movie that I found out by looking into the trivia. Did you know that Virginia Madsen was under some sort of hypnosis for the filming of many scenes?
Yeah, I did.
I did not. Apparently, the director, Bernard Rosenshee, this is a quote from Tony Todd, had been to see a professional hypnotist together. Every time she did a scene where I was involved, Bernard would take her aside for 10 minutes and hypnotize her with the techniques he learned there. This trance state allowed she and I both to probe deeper into our scenes and our characters. It created a real three-way process of bonding and trust between her, me, and Bernard. And then she said, toward, like, they did that for a little bit, and then she wasn't comfortable with it, so she said, we're not doing that anymore. It's too weird.
It's weird.
It's incredibly weird.
In the movie, you see her really, her eyes are, like, all pink.
I mean, I figured she was just acting.
Got, like, a thousand, you can act that.
Yes, you can. Yeah, right? Yeah.
I think there's like, a something, I think it was, like, Dustin Hoffman was, like, you know, basically starving himself for a role or something. He was like, I haven't had water in 5 days.
Uh-huh.
And Laurence of Olivier.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Olivia, he's goes, like, my he's dear like, boy.
My dear boy, have you tried acting?
Yeah,
I Why know. Don't you try acting? Something like that. It's like, yeah, you, so why don't you trust your performer to see if she can get there rather than Bernard Rose, you need to hypnotize her.
So strange.
Yeah.
Also, she and Tony Todd took ballroom dancing classes, so they'd be kind of like in sync and have this vibe of romance.
Oh.
It's rumored that Tony Todd had a B bonus written into his contract where he would earn $1,000 per bee sting sustained.
It's pretty brilliant if you're playing Candyman to write that in.
Totally. And depending on the source, he either got 23 or 26 bee stings.
Wow.
On the set. So nice chunk of change.
So jackpot.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Easy money.
It's like, there should be like 9 Candyman movies. If I were playing Candyman and I got $1,000 per bee sting,
yeah,
I'd be like Johnny Knoxville in that diaper of bees.
Oh, totally.
I'd be like, hell yeah, let's go again, everybody.
One day of discomfort and then I get to retire?
This is dope.
No prob. Also, apparently, There might have been some inspiration from a real murder that occurred. In 1987, there was a woman named Ruthie Mae McCoy, who was a resident of Chicago's Abbott Homes housing project, and she was killed by an intruder who entered her apartment through an opening behind the bathroom's medicine cabinet.
Now that, I think the medicine cabinet mirror mm-hmm. element is probably the best thing.
Definitely. It's my favorite part of it.
It's my absolute favorite part of this movie. And I think that Candyman summoning him from a mirror is purely because Bernard Rose read that story.
Yeah.
And he was like,
well, oh. Also clearly Bloody Mary stuff.
Yes. But I'm saying, like, I think that since there's no mirror shenanigans right. in the original short story, I think that he was like, oh, well, we're taking this to Chicago.
Yeah, totally.
Here's something that happened.
Too big a coincidence.
And it would be so interesting to utilize that. And in the movie, they even, like, Helen pulls her medicine kit. She shows this to her friend. So her friend Bernadette is over there, and she's, like, talking about the mirror and how somebody was killed with the killer coming through the bathroom mirror in Cabrini Green. And so she goes, my building used to be one of those buildings. And she goes, the proof is this. And she removes her medicine cabinet and reveals the back of the medicine cabinet from the apartment next yeah. door. She pushes it in and you can see into the next apartment. Mm-hmm. And as I was watching the movie, I was just like so into it again. And it also gave the two characters a reason to be face the two of them together in the bathroom looking into the mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like, it just starts to feel so perfect right there. Mm-hmm. That I love that. And it's so scary. I certainly, anytime I was a kid and we stayed at a hotel or something, I would get really creeped out when there was that door that opens, those two doors that can connect hotel rooms sometimes.
Oh, yeah. It's horrible.
That thing would scare the hell out of me. And I would open it to make sure that it was locked on the other side and stuff mm-hmm. like that. The idea of some unknown person who, these walls are supposed to protect you.
Yes.
Somebody can come through them. You're screwed.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a fascinating idea.
It's awesome. And just so everybody knows, there is a TikTok video out there, or maybe it's a series of TikTok videos, where a girl in New York realized that there was wind coming from behind the mirror in her bathroom. And so she investigated, and there was like a little crawl space back there, which is, oh, wait, actually, that's kind of a small room. Let me go in there. Entire apartment that was accessible from behind her bathroom mirror.
So crazy.
Totally.
I watched that as it came out.
Uh-huh.
And it gave me like absolute chills.
Yeah, it's really freaky.
She was far too brave.
Oh my God, I know. She attached a flashlight to her head with a headband and just like went in there.
She climbed through the mirror into the other apartment, which turned out to have been boarded up and walled off, and like, oh my God. So crazy.
I know. Worth a look up. Okay, so now we're moving on to Candyman 2 in 1995.
Can I say one last thing about Candyman 1?
Yes.
So, I found something out that Tony Todd did.
Uh-huh.
So, Bernard Rose, the writer-director of Candyman, they didn't do much to flesh out the Candyman character's background. They said how he was killed. But he was like, yeah, Tony Todd as like a character study or getting into character. You can write the background of your character. So here's what Tony Todd came up with. Granville T. Candyman was the was the scion of a rich black family in 1870s Chicago. Having gained fame for his portraits, Granville is commissioned to paint Helen, the ravishing daughter of a wealthy landowner. Granville demands that Helen pose in the nude as Venus, and her shock soon turns into love. This forbidden interracial affair brings the city's wrath down on Granville. Cutting his right painting hand off with a rusty blade, the lynch mob then covers his naked bunny with honey, cheering.
His naked bunny with honey?
Is that what I said?
Yes.
His naked bunny with honey. His naked body with honey, cheering as he's stung to death by bees.
Well,
some of this, I do feel, actually becomes part of the Candyman story as we go
Granville
on.
Granville T. Candyman, eh?
Granville T. Candyman.
Don't
because
it.
Not very well in this movie is it justified that he's called Candyman. So I think
no,
he was
it's
like,
really just that he's covered in honey.
I guess his name's Candyman. Yeah, I think his name is Mr. Candyman.
Everybody keeps calling him that.
Maybe it's Granville T. Candyman.
Yeah, tea too. It's funny.
I know. It's just to give pomp and circumstance, right? Yeah. It just feels fancier. Granville T. Candyman.
That's amazing. Okay, Candyman 2, 1995. So the professor dude from the first movie who was like, oh, do you know Bubbity Bub?
Yeah.
Is holding a lecture about Candyman in New Orleans. And he's written a book about Candyman, and it has a mirrored cover, which I actually think is an awesome idea.
Yep.
And during the process of giving this speech, he's like, he's not real, it's an urban legend, whatever, and says his name 5 times into his mirrored book cover to illustrate the point. Also, we hear what the Candyman's real name is for the first time, which is Daniel Robitaille.
I do love seeing when you go back and look at a franchise, you see how the legend gets built.
Yeah.
Daniel Robitaille is not mentioned by name anywhere in the original movie. That's why Tony Todd came up with Granville T. Candyman.
Yeah, he didn't have that information.
It's so fun to see it come together.
Yeah, totally. So a dude named Ethan comes up to him and is like, don't do that, man. My dad was investigating Candyman murders and he was killed. Candyman is real. Not a good idea. Then obviously Candyman kills that professor. And because Ethan stayed after to talk with him, he seems like a likely suspect and he is brought to the police station. So then his mom and his sister show up at the police station to try to help him out. And we meet his sister Annie, who ends up being kind of our main character. She's an art teacher, and in the course of the movie, one of her students mentions mentions Candy. And
some familiarity.
Yeah.
I started writing down like classic Seaman. Check out the sea dude.
Yeah. No, Candy. Mentions Candy. And again, she's like, he's not real. Don't worry about it. I'm going to say his name and do the whole thing. And then boom, her husband is killed. Candy starts stalking her, and it's revealed that she's pregnant with her husband's baby.
For fun, every time Kristen says Candy, imagine she's talking about John Candy.
A very different movie.
Funny man,
John Candy.
John Candy.
So she's looking into all this stuff because her brother being in jail is very tied now to the Candyman legend. So she's like trying to figure out what the deal is. And she talks to her dad's friend. Remember, their dad was killed while investigating the Candyman. And they say that part of the legend is that while torturing Daniel with the stuff that we learned about in the first movie, his girlfriend Caroline, is it Caroline or Carolyn in the movie? I don't remember.
Carolyn.
Carolyn's dad taunted him with a mirror of Carolyn's. And in so doing, that mirror sucked in a piece of his soul.
Right.
Then Carolyn buried it at Daniel's birthplace and gave him the ability to kill when called. So mote it be.
Yeah,
she yelled.
So now we've justified
the mirror thing. Yes, why there's a mirror involved at all.
Messy.
Yes. Annie and Ethan's dad had the theory that if you destroy the mirror, you destroy Candy. So more people die. This is a horror movie. All that stuff is happening. The cops are now on Annie's trail a little bit, being like, this girl's around a lot when people die. Because again, Candyman is doing this stuff, but he's like making it look like everybody else is doing it.
I know.
And she finds out that she's actually a descendant of Carolyn and Daniel. She even grew up in the house that Carolyn bought. So she goes to Daniel's birthplace and destroys the mirror. There's flooding. It's a whole thing. It's very messy, but she gets her done. Later on, we see that she has had her baby and named it Carolyn. The movie ends with a little girl saying Candyman, and Annie stops her. Just in case. Even though she seems to have banished Candy to the mirror realm.
Yeah. Now, I remember when we watched this movie together.
Yeah.
That I think we both came away from it going like, okay, all right. I don't think that either one of us particularly liked it.
I don't remember liking it. Yeah.
Really? I remember having a feeling of sort of like acceptance.
Yeah. I mean that, like, you know, all right.
Yeah. But I do like fleshing out more of the Daniel Robitaille
it's fun.
Story.
I know.
Think that that's kind of interesting.
I basically like what I just read. I didn't really like the process of watching it.
Yeah. No, I think the weird thing is that all of these movies, if you showed me, if I didn't know the answer already, if you showed me the movie Candyman and asked me when it was made, I would absolutely say to you, like, 1985.
Yeah, for sure.
Something about these movies, it's like the film quality.
They also have, like, that Vaseline lens.
They just all feel a lot older than they are. They do not feel like products of the 90s.
No, for sure, no.
No way. And Candyman 2 is the last time until this year.
Farewell to the Flesh, by the way. It's Candyman 2, Farewell to the Flesh. I didn't say that.
Farewell to the Bees.
Yes.
I keep
Candyman 3, City of Bees.
City of Bees. All year, anytime we talk about Candyman, just in our own life, there's something so enjoyable to me about switching those taglines to be even crappier.
Yeah.
To be Candyman 2, City of Bees. It's so funny. Like they just
City of Bees.
Because we know that he's got the bees.
Well, it wasn't even just that you thought it was funnier. You thought that it might be that.
And farewell to the Bees.
And then you looked it up and you're like, okay, it's not City of Bees.
It's not City of
Bees. It's Farewell to the Flesh. There's not even anything about a city in it. I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, maybe it's Candyman 3, Day of the Bees?
Yeah,
right. No, Day of the Dead. Okay, I guess I wasn't giving them enough credit. I guess I thought that bees were more important than they really are.
Yeah, I guess they're not. I guess it's that, like,
they're more important in the new one.
You'll
I'll say
see,
that.
Yes, they are. You'll see like a bee, and you're like, uh oh, he's about
a bee.
Yeah,
much like real life.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, we need them, but
I
also
feel similarly.
Whenever you see a bee, a part
of
me
a bee.
Uh oh,
yeah.
Here comes trouble,
danger.
See a bee moving into town.
Yeah.
So all right. We now jump to the first time that Candyman goes direct to video, and really the only time, actually. So, the movies didn't do that well.
No.
I don't think they really lit the world on fire. Let's really call out the fact,
particularly
also,
not Candyman 2, Farewell to the Flesh.
Farewell to the Bees.
It was pretty universally panned.
Right. Now, let's also acknowledge the fact, I think, that Candyman, being an early 90s slasher, slashers were done.
Mm-hmm.
People were sick of them. The Freddy movies were doing poorly. The Jason movies were doing terribly.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween with Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Whoa. So they were in bad shape. So it wasn't, I know, it wasn't until Scream that brought slashers back into style. And so I think that these movies underperformed for a variety of reasons. It was a bad time to invent a new slasher.
Yes.
But so in 1999... Now we've already had a couple of Scream movies.
Right.
The rules have been written about how to keep these things scrappy, light, energetic, fun.
Yeah.
Candyman 3.
Fantastic. Amazing. Always changing. Always innovating. Puke on it. Poop it out. Whatever. You know what I mean?
Puke bees on me.
Do you know what I'm doing?
I have no idea what you're
doing. Oh, come on, William. That Lady Gaga video where she's doing that.
Why do you think I don't know that?
Because I've shown it to you before. It's like one of my favorite memes.
Then I guess I should know it.
Yeah.
So
anyway. I have to show you after. It's awesome.
I guess I'll have to see it again. It'll feel like the first time somehow.
Yeah, because I had to censor myself. She doesn't say poop on it.
Oh, really? Is this how she feels about her art?
I don't remember what she's even talking about. Yeah, I think she's like, just get in there. Mess it up. Do it.
Mess it up is right, I guess. Yeah. So Candyman 3 Day of the Dead goes straight to video. Part of the problem, Tony Todd, this is allegedly, at a party, just walks up to a guy that works for Artisan, a distributor, and goes, would you make a Candyman movie?
Oh.
They go, yeah, hell yeah, we'd make a Candyman movie.
Enterprising.
Tony Todd doesn't own the rights to Candyman.
Yeah, right.
So they're in pre-production on this thing, and then somebody goes, whoa, hold on.
What?
Hold on, I think Sony, doesn't Sony own this?
Get out, that's crazy.
So they were almost screwed. They had to wait for Sony to decide whether they wanted to be involved or not, and thankfully Sony went, we don't care. Just make a Candyman movie.
That's nuts.
And so,
I can't believe they got that far.
It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild. So here's the premise, and this is even more wild. So Candyman 2, you've already established that Annie has her daughter Carolyn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Carolyn's a child at the end of that movie. Flash forward 25 years.
Okay.
The main character of Candyman 3 is Carolyn, all grown up.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that Candyman 3, Day of the Bees, from 1999, takes place in the year 2020.
Does it actually, though? Like, do they make it the future?
In the year 2020.
Do they make it the future in the movie?
They do nothing.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
To adjust the time period. You know, it's almost like they ignore.
I don't mind that so much, actually.
It's fine. It plays fine. I mean, you understand the limitations of the time.
Yeah.
It's just an odd impulse then to say, we'll set our movie 20 years in the future. Should we think about what you know, changing our society to look like it might in 20 years? No.
Yeah, it's strange.
It's a little strange.
Yeah.
So it looks like a movie made in, well, I was going to say 1999, but it really looks like a movie made in maybe 1992.
Uh-huh.
So again, baffling. The Scream movies have been out.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
This movie opens with our main character, Carolyn, played by Donna DeErico, I believe.
From Baywatch.
Baywatch. She is scantily clad.
Sounds right.
Walking through a bathroom.
Uh-huh.
With like bloom and glow.
And with it, what?
Bloom and glow. Like it, everything oh, just looks the Vaseline lens. Like
the
you were
way
describing.
That they treat the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the second the movie starts, like my sensors start going like, there's no such thing as direct-to-video anymore, right? Because things go straight to, like, Netflix or something. Uh-huh. So you don't really think about the quality drop. But I was watching, I was like, this isn't a real movie.
Yep.
And then, I was watching it, and I was like, why does this feel like it's going to be, like, a Skinamax
is it?
Kind of film? It's not, but it just never feels right. The production never feels real.
Okay.
Really at any point. And Donna DeErico, I'm sorry. I don't know.
Nothing about her.
So she is meant to play now. You realize the Candyman's great, 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 great granddaughter.
Right.
So the premise.
They don't go through a romance, do they?
They do.
Yeah, I know it. I knew it. I know.
Of course they
do. Why would you waste the raw sexuality of Donna DeErico?
I know.
Yeah.
And this is the third time that like a white blonde lady is the star of a Candyman movie?
Yeah.
It's just a little weird.
Yeah.
You know? So she is the last remaining descendant of Daniel Robitaille, and she is the keeper of his works. She has all of his paintings, including a gigantic self-portrait. It's humongous. It's a huge full-body self-portrait.
That's awesome.
Of Candyman.
Yeah.
And so she, I guess, the premise is she takes these and she puts them up in galleries and people come see them. She's trying to restore the idea of the man, Daniel Robitaille, not Candyman.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the people that own the gallery, like, have somebody with a hook come running through and act crazy for the scandal of it. And she's like, no, it's not what I want. But too late. They've summoned Candyman.
Yeah.
So it's around this point that I start thinking about Candyman again and the idea of his identity.
Uh-huh.
They'll do more to change his legend a little bit in this or flesh it out. They'll flash back to the way that he was killed again. This time, everyone chants Candyman 5 times before he dies.
Okay.
So that's why you have to say it 5 times.
Okay.
Not 3, which would be easier to do.
Yeah,
from,
I know.
I think from like a performance standpoint and from a timing standpoint.
I know.
Saying Candyman feels 5 times enough. Is just a mouthful.
Yeah.
Candyman, Candyman, Candyman. Like Bloody Mary. Get right into it.
Totally.
Saying it 5 times doesn't feel right to me rhythmically.
Me neither.
Anyway, they said it. They chanted.
Never has.
They chanted Candyman at him 5 times before he died, and that's why. And I started thinking. I was like, okay, so they cut off his hand. They replaced it with a hook. He was a painter. So they cut off his hand that used to create.
Right.
And jabbed a hook into it. Which is now a tool of destruction. No longer create, destroy. Candyman used to be a painter, an artist's soul. Shouldn't he be flourishing and like painting with people's blood? Or acting as he swipes you rather than ripping you from your groin to your gullet?
Yeah,
shouldn't
right. With his, like with his hook flourishing, for a hand.
Right? Like he's like turning Hannibal you Lecter. Into a work of art?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Yes.
It's just, anyway, it's really neither here nor there, but I'm 3 movies in and I'm still thinking, what's going on?
Right.
There's so much Candyman lore.
Yeah.
So, Carolyn is also hunted by the ghost of her mother, Annie, who is dead now.
Mm-hmm.
Between Candyman 2 and 3, she became unwell, seeming some sort of like dementia almost, and is believed to have killed herself eventually. Later it will be revealed that no, in the tub, in a moment of weakness, or is it an act of suicide, she summoned Candyman. Which just is weird and doesn't feel true to who the character was in the second movie.
Yeah, why?
You know?
Yeah.
Why just get rid of her? So anyway, as people are dying, there's a detective named Kraft. Real cheese versus candy kind of scenario.
Nice.
And he is certain that Carolyn is responsible for all the murders. He will lose his mind over the course of the story in a way that almost makes him feel like somehow Candyman's using him as a Renfield.
Okay.
But he's not. This guy's just losing his mind. A gang of, I think, people who love Candyman.
Candy people?
Candy boys.
Uh-huh.
Who just love them.
Yeah.
Steal all of Daniel Robitaille's paintings. Carolyn's in love with a dude that gets kidnapped, kind of like Candyman kidnapping the baby.
Yeah.
She's got to give herself up to save the boy that she loves or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
She eventually ends up tracking the gang down to their hideout where all the paintings are. And Candyman's self-portrait is, I think, meant to seem like it's way up on top of almost like a pile of refuse or like a beehive. Or maybe it's also supposed to kind of look like the bonfire from Candyman 1.
Okay.
Except it's clear that it like is, you know, 5 feet high and it just it looks like a high school production.
Okay.
And so she has to climb this thing, but she can't. She keeps sliding back down. And then she finally climbs to the top and she slices the Candyman portrait. I think accidentally sets it on fire.
Okay.
Which has the effect of setting Daniel Robitaille on fire.
The actual Daniel Robitaille?
Well, the Candyman.
Okay. Yeah.
And so he's gone. Oh. And then the Detective Cheese shows up with a hook. He's lost his mind.
And he's like Dr. Sartanian.
He's like Dr. Sartain. And so he wants to kill Carolyn. And then another cop shows up and shoots him first. And she pins the Candyman murders on him.
Okay.
So that there is no myth of Candyman anymore.
Oh, okay.
Candyman will be gone forever.
Okay.
So, let's talk about this, and I promise I won't spoil it.
What?
Candyman 3.
Yeah.
Ends with Candyman seemingly being gone for good.
Wait, what are you not spoiling?
Candyman 2021.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm about to say. So, he's gone. And the movie takes place accidentally in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And Candyman is in need of, then if they're going to make more, he's in need of a reboot.
Yeah.
Himself as a guy because he's gone.
Yeah.
Or, you know, to be reborn or something like that. And quite frankly, I sort of feel like Candyman 2021 actually picks up from there.
From the way you're describing it, it sounds like it kind of does. Do you think that was the intent?
Of course not.
Okay.
I think Candyman 2021 is intended to be what everybody talks about, like the soft reboot, or, you know, it's supposed to be a sequel to the original, although they do use the name Daniel Robitaille.
They do.
Which is an invention of Candyman 2.
Right.
And I do feel like it doesn't necessarily outright contradict anything, especially when you do the math and realize that Candyman 3 Day of the Bees takes place in 2020 and this new movie takes place now. So 1 year later,
you cracked something open.
So 1 year later,
right?
Daniel Robitaille needs
He
needs a whole new game.
Yeah.
And there you go. So that's where you hop. That's right. That's where you hop over to patreon.com/gttupod to listen to us talk about Candyman 2021, because we'll basically pick it up from right there, really.
Yeah, totally.
But that almost wasn't the case. There was nearly, in the 20 years it's been, there was nearly a Candyman 4 proper.
Uh-huh.
So I do have some info about that.
Okay.
So, around the turn of the century, after the year 2000, Freddy versus Jason is very popular.
Yes.
And somebody gets a wry idea. Candyman versus who? Who do you think?
Well, Freddy and Jason are taken.
Yes.
So, Michael Myers?
Not a bad idea. I mean, in terms of... It's
well,
a bad
I know,
idea,
I know.
But in terms of trying to pick an icon.
I know what you're saying. I don't know who.
Candyman versus Leprechaun.
Oh, my God. That's horrible. I feel
so
that's
horrible.
Not, that's not even footing.
No. For who? What do you mean?
Well, no, like, they're
who's
not...
in trouble? Are you saying, like, that's not going to be a fair fight?
No.
Of course the Leprechaun will win.
That's not what I'm saying, but also that is true. No, they're not of the same caliber, even though I don't, like, I just kind of like Candyman. Leprechaun is crap.
It's not, if it's not Scottish, it's crap. Yeah, it is. Maybe we'll cover Leprechaun someday.
No.
You want to talk about Leprechaun flute?
No.
All right. So, that was scrapped.
Yeah.
Obviously, it doesn't exist. We know that it doesn't exist in our reality.
Yeah.
But, Tony Todd, when he was presented with a script, said, I will never be involved in something like that. Which is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for having some
integrity.
Yeah. In 2004, he commented on the possibility of just a Candyman 4. And here's what he said. He said, we've got an idea. We're just trying to get it together to get a script going, but we've got a concept. Quote, I know it will take place in New England. It will take place in a women's college. I know we're going to use the seasonal elements, such as snow. We're just waiting. We're just waiting for the go-ahead to move forward. He also referenced how studios wanted to do Candyman versus Hellraiser.
Okay, that makes more sense.
But he knew that would suck, too. At least those are two Clive Barker properties, right?
Yeah.
Years later, he would talk more about this women's college concept of Candyman 4 to Bloody Disgusting. Evidently, Candyman would have been a professor. He has cut off his...
How?
I don't know. He's dead. He's a dead ghost.
Right.
So,
okay.
Good question.
Go ahead.
He had to... Did he apply for the job?
I don't know. Did he down Helen Lyle as a reference?
Is he tenured?
Yeah.
Right. So he has cut off his hook arm in an effort to suppress his monstrous history, which, quite frankly, is probably a good move because Professor Candyman with that hook hand.
Yeah.
I think he'd be giving himself away.
Oh my God.
So he says that Candyman never wanted to become a monster, which...
True.
If you're trying to really start from scratch somehow...
That's true.
Right? He was a victim.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, let him try to not be a monster.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he says, quote, he was going to end up as a one-armed Candyman. He's trying to teach without becoming personally involved. It's kind of like the Hulk. If he gets too close, the curse would continue. Because it's not like he chose to be a villain. If people remember correctly, he was lynched. His hand was cut off under mob sanction. Note, he was not lynched.
I know. I was just thinking. That's not true, right?
This is Tony Todd saying it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Quote, people have to realize that at the core of the original Candyman was a great love story. That's why I wanted him in a female environment.
That's really funny.
For love.
He's going to be blowing through that college?
Yeah.
That's also not appropriate.
No, Professor.
Right.
Professor Candyman?
Yeah. No, you're not supposed to do that until they've, like, graduated.
Back off, bro.
Yeah.
Trying to keep his temperament in check until something happens.
Oh my God.
Something horrific happens to one of the students and his inner compulsions return. We hadn't fully decided what that triggering event was. And then he says this, which I loved. He's like a shark, right? You don't want that. Particularly in a university setting.
That's a good
point.
True.
It's a very good point.
He's not wrong.
You don't want
a
shark in your
university. But he wouldn't be like a shark with what he's saying. I guess he would eventually turn and then he's like a shark.
I guess he's saying he's like, you know, a gentle intellectual guy who...
Yeah, until there's an inciting event that turns him into the Candyman.
A shark who's trying to be...
A porpoise.
Yeah.
A
dolphin?
Yeah.
This is an idea. Now, here's an idea. It's like a werewolf, but it's a dolphin that turns into a shark.
Yeah. Good. Keep it away from me. Be in the ocean.
Yeah, be in the ocean, punk. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. At least that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So we got the new one. We got the Nia DaCosta Candyman.
That's
2021.
Right.
I think it's an interesting concept. Candyman is one of those things that I love talking about because there's so much. I know I'm criticizing the concept of the character, but I do enjoy, especially watching it for this.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this was the time that really made it click for me that I was kind of enjoying everything that was happening. But I think it's such an interesting idea, and I love that it's rooted in urban legends.
Yeah, I
love all the conversation about legends. I love that the legend changes.
I know
from
it is
telling
neat.
To telling. I think that that's very interesting as well.
Yeah.
But I think it's undeniably messy, and
yes.
I think the messiness. And this is a spoiler for our conversation, about the new Candyman movie. But I do think the messiness continues.
Oh, yeah.
In a whole new way.
Oh, for sure it
does.
With
Candyman 2021. So, everybody, if you enjoyed this conversation with us talking about the origin of Candyman in the original trilogy, I strongly suggest go over to patreon.com/gttupod and hear us continue talking about the new movie now. We do spend the first few minutes spoiler-free giving you our feelings, and we give you ample warning before we launch in and talk about everything. So if you haven't seen it, you're safe. If you have seen it, have fun, because like maybe 10 minutes into the show, we drop the
spoiler-free
notion, and we talk about everything there is to say. And there's a lot to say. There's, you know, as messy as I find it to be, sometimes it's really fun to like I don't know, tidy up a mess or strategize about what might be or try to pick apart what is. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy talking about Candyman.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. He's got the goods.
He's got the goods.
Sweets for the sweet. We have all kinds of other stuff over on patreon.com/gttupod as well. That Candyman episode is one of, I believe, 25 bonus episodes to date.
Yeah.
But besides that, there are actually many bonus episodes. There are commentaries for all of the Scream movies. There's a really, really awesome Discord. And we super appreciate you supporting the show by donating $4 or more per month to us to thank us for the free stuff
that we put out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you get a ton of stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
Not too shabby.
No, not bad.
So there you go, everybody. Hope you enjoyed us talking about Candyman. I'm really curious to see what might happen next.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, I strongly suggest everybody go read the original short story.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
It's really good. It may have gotten me into Clive Barker a little bit. It's so different that it's actually kind of fun to see. You know, I love like rules and storytelling and world building. And it's really fun to see where this stuff came from and start to do the math in your head of how it got converted to what it became in movies. I love that sort of thing. So definitely check that out. Books of Blood, book 5 has The Forbidden, the original short story. But that'll do it for us, everybody. Go follow at GTTUpod on all social media to keep up with us. Everything you need from us, you can find at GTTUpod.com.
com,
the home of Guide to the Unknown, including links to our merch page on TeePublic. And if you'd like, you can even get in touch with us online.
That's right. I'm at Chillin' Kristen.
I am at The Myth Traveler. So we'll be back next week for something creepy.
Ooh.
But until that time comes, we must travel.
Back to the... I caught it from you. Back to the netherworld, go we.
Don't blame.
But it was your fault. I caught it.
Would you say Candyman into the mirror 5 times?
Yes.
Would you say...
It's a fictional movie. I'm not that nuts.
Would you say Bloody Mary into the
mirror
5 times?
Yes.
Okay.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.